Well, good afternoon, everyone. Hope this is turning out to be a spiritually profitable day for you and not just an endurance test. There have been times in the past, not on the Day of Atonement, but on other days when you embark on what we do on this day, and sometimes that's what it turns out to be, an endurance test. You got to be approaching it the right way and for the right reasons. You know, to some people out in the world, one of the features of the way we observe this Day of Atonement may seem strange, puzzling. Many are acquainted with fasting for health reasons as part of a particular dietary or health regimen, which is, of course, a different way of fasting. To many others, fast simply means the opposite of slow. But many might be inclined to ask, why do you people, quote-unquote, celebrate a holy day by fasting? Now, some of us might also wonder about this. Did God just arbitrarily decide it would be an interesting way to make the day different? Let's be sure we know why we do what we do the way we do it. So let's ask two questions. Why do we ever fast at any time? And why on the Day of Atonement? The answer to one actually is pretty much the answer to the other. First, let's see how we know we are to fast on this day. It may not be immediately apparent simply by reading Leviticus 23, but let's turn there and we'll see what Leviticus 23 says and look at what also it doesn't say, at least to us in modern English. In Leviticus 23, beginning in verse 27, it says, "Also on the 10th day of the 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord." Skip to verse 29. "For any person who is not afflicted of soul on that same day, he shall be cut off from his people." And then down in verse 32. "It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls. On the 9th day of the month at evening, from evening to evening you shall celebrate your Sabbath." Now, when we look at this term, afflict your souls, we may wonder, what does that mean? Down in verse 32, my margin says that afflict your souls can also be rendered humble yourselves. Okay. So how? How do we humble ourselves? What exactly does it mean to afflict our souls? If afflict and humble mean the same thing, how do we do that? Actually, we have to look elsewhere to see where and how the same Hebrew word here that's translated afflict your souls, how it's used in a way that more clearly defines its meaning. Because if we're reading this just in English, we don't immediately understand that it's telling us to fast. So let's turn to Psalm 35. See, the word that is used back here in Leviticus 23, it's also found in Leviticus 16 and Numbers 29, where it says to afflict your souls, is a Hebrew word, anah, A-N-A-H, as it's transliterated into English. But let's see how the same word is used here in Psalm 35:13. David's talking about people who were standing up against him, people who showed themselves to be his enemies. He said, "Fierce witnesses rise up. They ask me things that I do not know. They reward me evil for good to the sorrow of my soul. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled myself with fasting." Here he uses that same Hebrew word, anah, only instead of afflict, here it says humbled. It also said in the margin, remember back in Leviticus 23, I humbled or humbled yourselves. But it didn't say how. Here it shows us how we humble ourselves, by fasting. That Hebrew word anah means to afflict, to abase, to weaken, to beat down, to chasten, or to humble the self. And here we see that the way we do that, the way we afflict or chasten or humble ourselves, is by fasting. We don't need to turn there, but in Psalm 69:10, it says essentially again the same thing. When I wept and chastened my soul with fasting, that became my reproach. Here it says, chastened my soul. It could just as easily have said, afflicted or humbled my soul with fasting. Also, again, we don't need to turn there, but in Isaiah 58:13, the expression in verse 3 is used, why have we fasted? And then later, why have we afflicted our souls? So the two terms are used synonymously or interchangeably here in Isaiah 58. We don't have time to really go into that chapter, but you might want to, if you haven't already done so, review it, because it shows us a lot about the right and wrong approach to fasting, the right kind of attitude that we should have when we embark on a fast in the first place. But why is it so important to be humble? And if we're to humble ourselves with fasting, why are we doing that? Why is it so important to be humble? A lot of people in today's world look at it as a sign of weakness. If they meet up with a humble person, they, being naturally aggressive, competitive, prideful, they look at it as a bad thing, not a good thing. But the fact is, it's how we draw close to God. In fact, we have to be humble if we're going to draw close to God. In reconciliation, a word closely associated with atonement. We fast to humble ourselves, and humbling ourselves is the only way we can be close to God. We've read many times Isaiah 66:2. Let's just look at it again, because it shows a great deal of what it is that God expects from us, or the attitude, the mental posture we must have if we are to gain God's favor, God's grace, His approval. He says, beginning in verse 1 of Isaiah 66, thus says the Lord, heaven is my throne, the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that you will build for me? And where is the place of my rest? For all those things my hand has made. And all those things exist, or they already exist, I made them. But on this one will I look, on him who is poor and of a contrite spirit, and who trembles at my word. In other words, one who is humble, one who is repentant, and one who stands in humble awe of whatever God says here in his word. Let's look into the New Testament and see what a couple of the apostles wrote concerning the subject of humility and its importance. Let's turn to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 5, he emphasizes here humility as well. In chapter 5, and in, beginning in verse 6, he says, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your old, to your elders. Yeah, to your olders. Oftentimes they are older. And in this case, I think he is talking about older people, people whom we should respect and have a degree of humility toward. He says, yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for, and here he quotes Proverbs 3:34, God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. So if we're not humble, we can't expect to have a truly close personal relationship with God. We have to be humble to gain his approval, to be at peace with him, to have a truly close, intimate relationship with him. In verse 6, he says, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Let's turn back just a few pages here to James chapter 4. In James chapter 4, much the same thing is being told us here. Notice this language, the language of humility, the language of fasting. We're breaking into the account here in verse 6 of James 4. I won't take time to read everything that preceded it. Actually, I'm interested in what begins here in the beginning of verse 6. But he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit to God. Notice how submit to God and humble are closely related here. Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. This is the language of fasting, the language of humility. And this is the sort of thing that should be going on in our hearts and minds as we fast. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and again, he will lift you up. We fast on atonement because atonement pictures reconciliation between man and God, at-one-ment with God. It means being back in his good graces, having his divine favor, being accepted by him, having peace with or being at peace with God. And this is only possible when we are in a humble, yielded, submissive, and teachable frame of mind. We cannot have God's grace, favor, or approval when we're prideful, arrogant, hard-nosed, hard-hearted, stubborn, or in a self-righteous, self-justifying, self-assured, self-exalting state of mind. Such an attitude is totally out of sync with God's nature. And of course, we all want to become like God, acquire his nature. Jesus Christ's nature was a perfect reflection of his nature. And in Matthew 11:29, Jesus said, I am meek and lowly in heart. And so must we be before God will accept us into a truly close, personal, intimate relationship with him. Fasting helps us acquire a more humble, yielded heart and mind and helps us recognize our utter dependence upon God for everything, our every need, whether it be physical or spiritual. So then the bottom line is, we fast, whether on this day or any day, not to have our way with God or to simply score brownie points with him, but to humble ourselves and show that we earnestly desire a closer relationship with him. And that's what the Day of Atonement pictures. Each of us personally and individually, and ultimately all of mankind collectively, at one with our Creator and loving Father.